Info.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are trying to reach out to Professor Patutomi. Once Professor Patutomi joins us, we would bring him on. But while we wait for him to join us, let me bring the conversation to you once again. Nigeria, you know what we've been facing. Crisis here, crisis there. People complaining here, people complaining there. Corruption here, corruption there. The allegations and, the signs of bad leadership every now and again, from government to another government to another government. So today, it's imperative that we begin. It's imperative we start to talk about those threats head on. It's imperative that everybody gets together and try to analyze what is the biggest threat. Perhaps we're being distracted from the main issue. Perhaps we've not even started to look in the right direction in terms of charting a new course for this great country of ours called Nigeria. So I asked the question at 5 a.m. today. The threats, the biggest of the threats that this country is faced with right now in terms of surviving whatever challenges that we're facing right now, what is that biggest threat that Nigeria is faced with that could make or mar Nigeria? Well, mar in this instance. What is that threat? Corruption? You think it's corruption? Tribal conflict? Maybe. You can identify it, right? Insecurity, maybe. Boko Haram, ISWAP, bandits, and all of those things. Yeah. Oh, bad governance. Bad governance. Maybe that's one. Maybe that's the biggest. I mean, these are obvious ills that we see, we can confirm, everybody knows about. But which one is the biggest? Which one should be our topmost priority in tackling? If you're watching on Facebook, let me know your biggest existential threat to the survival of this country. If you're watching on YouTube, I would love to hear from you as well. That's Nigeria Info 99.3 on those two platforms. Nigeria Info 99.3. Let me know what you think. If you're listening and you like to call in, please do. I will give you the time to talk. Pending the time that we have Prof on the show this morning. 0700-993-993-993. That is 0700-993-993-993. For the telephone, the number is 01465-7190. For the ladies only, that is 01465-7190. For the ladies only. Prof has joined us. Prof has joined us right now. But before we bring Prof on, I would love to... Prof, please, I crave your indulgence. Let me just squeeze in two calls. Just two calls before I come to you. Hello, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
Morning to you.
Yes, thank you. I think our biggest problem is corruption and insecurity. Now, I want to enlighten you concerning corruption. I want to drive your mind in the area where you don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
These foreign investors, China, Lebanese people.
Right.
For instance, during the lockdown, I loaned money, these online loan people.
Yeah.
You know, they brainwash our youths. They use them to fight against the citizens. Now, imagine the taxes they put in their loan is something more than 100% interest.
More than 100%.
Yes, and this thing is diving down deep into the common Nigerian.
But you were told before going for the loan, so how do you blame them for that?
No, yes, of course, we are told, but imagine the situation where somebody is taking advantage of you. You don't have any option because you know you need the money. That's the situation Nigeria is. Corruption is eating
corruption
down Nigeria.
All right.
These foreign people, they are contributing to the poverty in Nigeria. I think the government have to look into that matter.
All right. Thank you for calling me, though. We'll speak with Rhoda, then we'll come to Prof. Rhoda, hi. Good morning to you.
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Sherry.
Good morning to you, Rhoda.
The problem we have in Nigeria is insecurity.
Insecurity.
Nowhere is safe. You can't move from one place to another
right
without being attacked. The government should try and do something about that. Every other thing is minor as far as I'm concerned. Once you are safe,
we
can handle other things.
All right. That's the biggest problem.
Is the most important thing right now.
Right, right.
When you are traveling, your family members are not at peace.
Mm.
They will have to start calling until you get to where you are going.
Mm.
The government should buckle up on insecurity. Thank you.
Thank you, Rhoda. Now, let's speak with Professor Patutomi. Professor, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you.
Prof, let's start this way. If I may, what would you say is the biggest existential threat that Nigeria is faced with? I mean, we know that we have so many. But with your experience and, you know, your role in this space, what would you say is the biggest?
I might shock you by my response, because it might not be all the ones that we throw up every day.
Ah.
Okay. Biggest existential threat to Nigeria is citizenship.
Oh, my word.
I knew I was going to get you there. I knew you were going to think headsman, this. But all of those problems exist because of a failure of citizenship. It is what has allowed us to drift to those points. And when we do deal with these problems that we call existential threats, what we do mainly is look at the symptoms, not the underlying cause, the reasons why we have those problems. And I think the time to begin to deal with the roots of problems is now, because this cutting the surface has left us a recursive nation, a country that goes two steps forwards and five steps backwards repeatedly. I will get to the brink, we come back, and then nobody has learned any lesson. The next band of whatever, you know, repeat the same errors, and we just keep going. It's not sustainable. We can't continue like that. And the only thing that brings a true check is citizenship. When the citizens, or when the people become citizens and hold everybody to account.
Who is a citizen? You said when the people become citizens. Who is a citizen? What is expected of a citizen?
Well, let me, in fact, go back to Greek times to illustrate how they ranked human beings in a community. And a general set of human beings who just want to survive, think of themselves, and how can I just, you know, the only thing that's important to me is me, myself, I, you know. And the Greeks called those people idiots. Now, today we misuse the word idiots in terms of how they use it a little bit to talk of somebody who is moronic, but really it meant somebody so selfish that he just thinks, or she just thinks, of themselves. And the nature of man, truly, is that man was created as a gift one to the other. Man was created to live in community, to care one for the other. And when we take away from that nature of ours, we become idiots. Now, at the next level, people who think of those who are related to them by blood or by some ways, and just that our group is the group that matters. Everybody else is an enemy, you know? He speaks another language, he's an enemy. He eats from with his fork, we eat with our fingers. They're enemies, and they're ready to go to war against those people. Those people are called tribesmen, tribalists. The third level of human beings are people who think of the common good of all. These are citizens who want to engage so that they can, in being involved, create platforms that makes life, the humanity of everybody, dignified and pursued with dignity, you know. That's the citizen. Unfortunately, Nigeria has been deteriorating from the age of citizens towards idiotic mood. We've been going backwards. I mean, I can give you very simple examples. When I was 9 years old, I traveled from a town called Guzo in what would be Zamfara State today, mm-hmm. all the way to Onitsha. I changed trains in Kaduna, got another train to Enugu, and got on a bus to Onitsha. Unsupervised, my parents didn't have any fear anything would happen.
As a nine-year-old then, wow.
Took exams and returned all the way back to Guzo. Today, a 24-year-old man is going to do youth corps. His mother in Abuja. His mother accompanies him from Lagos to Abuja to make sure that everything is okay before she comes back. Now, is this advancement or retreat for a society? Because in those days, there was enough trust in other human beings. Today, there isn't. Trust is a very critical if you will, gift to society. You can tell how the country is doing. In today's society, Denmark, Finland, those will be classic high trust societies. In a country like Nigeria, such a trust deficit. I mean, we all, let's not pass us on radio, we all think our leaders are bandits. Most of them are, to be frank. But that is a huge distrust kind of level. It means that when they say, do something, we'll say, let's check properly. Is it because they want to steal some more? Or is it, you know, so public action does not go in synergy that leads to progress as compared to when Denmark acts. Look at the way that Denmark responded to COVID-19 compared to the way that we do and all of that. So citizenship is so critical for progress.
I want to ask you, Prof.
Because
though,
we
apologies for butting in. Let me ask you, citizenship and progress. Nigeria is where Nigeria is now, but this did not start today. You mentioned when you were 9 years old. What changed? I mean, what caused it? How did we begin to lose that sense of citizenship from when it started? I don't know. I have no idea when it started. If you do, please let us know. To this very, very moment, what was and what is responsible?
I think it developed progressively, sadly. And politics is significantly responsible for it. If you look at the first generation of Nigerian political leaders, I mean, there were exceptions of people who behaved very badly. But if you look at somebody like Chief Obafemi Awolowo, somebody like Dr. Michael Okpara, even Ahmadu Bello in his own way, these were people who lived literally completely for those they served. One of my favorite examples is Dr. Michael Okpara. Man was premier of Eastern Region, the whole of Eastern Region. He allocated all the plots in Independence layout, Enugu, GRA, blah, blah, blah. Didn't give himself one single plot of land.
Oh, my.
Because we even have a story from even inter-military rule, the early part of military rule, Hassan Usman Katsina, the military governor of Northern Nigeria, applies for a loan to buy a house from government kind of housing scheme.
Yeah.
And the person in charge, Abubakar Imam, I think, I remember, just scratching out his name. And when he came to the governor, I said to him, it is disgraceful that you, who will make the decision, should be put a name in such a thing. Usman Katsina apologized. Now, we now have a situation where the governor in Enugu, whoever he is today, yes, just a few years ago, where Okpara did not give himself one plot, can actually take 200 plots. That's how we've traveled from those days to now. These are the things that have diminished citizenship. Because they have tried to rationalize their behavior in all kinds of ways, setting people against the other. And so we've now built a very low trust political environment. And citizenship has receded. Because of this recession of citizenship, we do have people who just make impunity their way. So, I mean, let me give you an example. Let's not get political or anything. You know, Myanmar, terrible soldiers have run Myanmar for years. They've come back in this coup. Ousted Aung San Suu Kyi.
Right.
People have been on the streets demonstrating for 3 weeks now. One woman has been killed, and there's outrage. You saw her burial yesterday. Literally, the whole country came out in outrage.
Right.
In Nigeria, young men and women completely wrapped in national colors and everything come out, and well-trained soldiers, armed to the teeth, just come and open fire on them in cold blood. We tried disputing how many were slaughtered, but we've moved on with our lives. And the reason they did that is to tell you, who the hell are you? We have power. Don't dare us. And that's why Nigeria is where it is.
Do you think the citizens are aware of the what citizenship means? Prof, do you think the people know exactly what it means?
That is really part of the problem, the failure of political parties in Nigeria, the failure of the political party system. Because that's why political parties exist. It's an aggregation of thought structured in a manner that enables you to socialize, to educate people into what, you know, social order you would like to see. And it's that education, that emancipation. I mean, if you just think of how NEPU in the 50s emancipated the Tarakawas, the artisan class in Kano. I lived there then, you know, I was a child, but I still have images of myself as a NEPU kid, you know. So political parties today have been a complete... Look at the conversation going on in APC. About registration. What is an issue? What's registration? What is it about? It's because the whole thing is a farce. The registers are all false. So they're struggling who can have the control over these false registers so that they can exclude the Nigerian people from deciding who govern the Nigerian people. This is what has happened to Nigeria. The intellectuals have gone to sleep. They can't even speak up. The thugs have taken over the country. And so everything else that's happening to us is dependent on this structure. So you can go and look at Headsman. You can go and look at... These are all just byproducts of fundamental values. Look, look at the people who are making the mess everywhere in Nigeria. They're professional people. The gangsters may be the so-called power politicians, huh? But look at who they are using. The lawyers are damaged at every level. Why is the bar not able to sanction its members in public life? To say, look, Mr. Attorney General, you cannot behave like this. We will not accept you back as a lawyer. You are off our roll. There is no governor who steals anything. They doesn't have accountants collaborating in making it easy for him to steal. Why can't Anand, whoever say, hey, you guys who go in there and these kinds of things happen, you will not be called accountants anymore. And so these are all manifestations of citizenship. And we have just failed to make that happen in Nigeria. And so we will have herdsmen and farmers. Look, when there are herdsmen and farmers around since Nigeria became independent, why is it that it's only in the last 5 years that it has become a hot button issue? It's the same phenomenon. A collapse of culture. The values are non-existent.
So that's quite scary, Kov.
Who manages to steal enough ballot boxes, declares himself a governor or whatever title he wants, and the same lawyers will run around in the night and go to his house. Excellency, excellency. And because they're trying to make some money. And we're all paying the price for it. So nobody should exonerate themselves. and call government, call that. We are all responsible for the mess.
Wow. That's quite blanket, Prof. I'm sure a lot of people will call in now and disagree with you.
You've got to accept people like me who have fought all the way. I don't take exception. I have part of my fault. I could have done more, maybe.
It's quite heavy. I mean, so, that's why we brought up this conversation, Prof, so that we can speak to ourselves frankly, no holds barred, and speak straight, look ourselves straight into the eyes and tell ourselves the truth. It could be uncomfortable, but the truth will always remain the truth. Prof, let's go on a quick break. Yeah, when we return, I will talk to you some more about the security situation in the country, banditry, the kidnap of schoolboys, and the rest of it. Lagos, Nigeria, stay with us. Professor Patu Tommy is here with us on the Morning Crossfire today, and we're looking at the existential threats Nigeria is faced with, and he's made some valid thought this morning out there that citizens are responsible. You, me, we are all responsible. Stay here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. We're back in a moment.
Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
And yes, we're live from our audiovisual studios on Etimian Crescent, Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria. If you are watching on Facebook and on YouTube, welcome. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure you're seeing Prof on your screen right now. If you're watching, Nigeria Info 99.3 is how you can join us on Facebook and on YouTube. Nigeria Info 99.3. I am Sheriff Quadri. This is the Morning Crossfire. 8:32 from our studios here. Thank you all for being there since 5 a.m. that we started this conversation of existential threat facing Nigeria. Professor Pat Utomi has joined us this morning to talk about this. Prof, thank you again for joining us on the show this morning.
Pleasure.
Let's begin this round by, talking specifics. Let's go in the direction of banditry. A lot of people have put forth solutions to how, banditry can be brought to a halt. Solutions, give them blanket immunity, launch a full-on assault on them and all. But Prof, please help out. What is the most effective way to curbing banditry?
What is banditry?
Hmm.
What is armed robbery? Can you define those and tell me the difference between an armed robber and a bandit?
Hmm. Hmm.
In my limited understanding of things, a bandit is a worse other armed robber. Hmm. Because there is no cause beyond personal gain. When people try and compare bandits, as they are called, with militants in the Niger Delta, it's actually insulting, because militants in the Niger Delta are fighting for a cause. When you look at Boko Haram, you basically see nihilists, people who just total social destruction. And even them, a higher order group than bandits. These are just common criminals who are making a living from killing and maiming others and trying to get to extort monies from them. I think we have gotten things so upside down in Nigeria that it makes conversation even difficult. What we have in Nigeria is a collapse of culture. It collapses all the definitions. So base, so unthoughtful, that people will be comparing super robbers with people who are fighting for liberation, which is really what the Niger Delta struggle was. It's just like during the days of the nationalist struggle in Africa. the Mau Mau movement in Kenya, for example. The British call them terrorists. We call them freedom fighters. You could find reason why they were fighting. I need somebody to explain to me what the bandits are fighting for. If I knew that, it would be easier, you know, for me to then ascribe some kind of solution. I think we're beginning to generally insult the intelligence of people. And the world is mocking us because of the way we are reducing serious arguments. I'm willing to wait to hear what it is that they are fighting for. Once I see the cause, I will recognize them as people fighting for a cause. But I've not seen the cause. Are they fighting poverty? That, oh, you've let us be poor, so we're fighting against you for making us poor. Then we know what the target is. We know how to deal with it. But I don't know. Maybe it's just that I'm not paying attention. Maybe I'm lost in my own world. So maybe you who are there hearing the world every day can tell me, what is it that they're fighting for, the bandits?
Not exactly. I'm not sure it's been stated out clearly. I'm not sure nobody has stated it clearly. It's not just you, Prof. We don't exactly know.
I think that, you know, people are, because of this descent from citizenship into tribesmen, people are owning causes. This is our cause. These are our terrible people. You have your own terrible people. So give to our terrible people what we give your own terrible people. You know, that's the kind of thing that I see going on. But let's define these are quote-unquote terrible people and why they are being terrible, and so that we can understand whether we are comparing apples and apples or apples and oranges.
I want to get your thoughts concerning the kidnap of the Kagara schoolboys. What's your thoughts on that generally, Prof?
Well, precisely my point. I'm not so sure. Did they give any reason for kidnapping them other than
for
pure
ransom.
Extortion? That's all. That's criminality. And when you reward criminals by paying them, you can only encourage more of that.
Are you saying, you know, that we shouldn't pay ransom if, I mean, they're demanding ransom? There's no justification in paying ransom to free the boys, Prof.
I've just said to you, In all things, obviously, you have to apply wisdom.
Okay.
But if the first order is to succumb to a blackmailer, then you are a permanent target for blackmail. And so my first move will not be ransom. In fact, given the way our country is, government officials might even become part of the scheme so that they can they can pay the thing through this agent who kidnapped the thing to themselves. I mean, the whole thing is so dangerous. What you need is a military, a police that can go after these people and completely kill the practice. You know? But we seem somehow, because we are trading bad boys. Say, oh, look, you have your bad boys, just our own bad boys. It's not the same thing. And you know what's so sad about these things?
What's that?
People who are defending the indefensible eventually become the ones who pay a dear price, a dearer price. Because what goes around comes around. Eventually, they will be the victims tomorrow.
Right.
I've seen this happen again and again and again, that is so short-sighted to play that game.
I want to talk to you. Prof, let's move on before we start taking calls. Let's move on to farmers, herders, conflicts. That has now dovetailed into tribal chaos. We saw what happened in Ogun State. We saw what happened in Oyo State, Ibadan, the other time. Is this not becoming a threat, a major threat to existential well-being of the country?
Yeah, but it's a failure of leadership. As I said, there were farmers 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And they were herders 20 years ago. It did not become an existential threat to the country, did it? Why is it today? I live in Ibadan. In 1969, as a schoolboy at Loyola College, when we had the Agbekoya uprisings. They were engaged. They were sorted. It's always about leadership. When you live in a time when we don't have leaders, when we have opportunistic incompetence and it's in political office, what you see is not a heartfelt commitment to solving a problem.
Right, right.
And then you get them lingering. In fact, sometimes this took the matter. They actually took it. I mean, I don't know whether it's a fair thing to say here, because I can't mention the name. It's not fair yet. It will be my memoirs for sure. But see, less than 4 months after General Buhari was sworn in as president in 2015, a former governor, who's a Fulani man, former governor of one of the northern states, called me and said to me, "These people, you people put there, this person you people put there, might find that the greatest harm that he will do is to the Fulani people." Because the way he is allowing things to go, when he eventually leaves power, the Fulanis may be the most hated people in Nigeria for several generations. Fulani man, former military governor. You know, this NC doesn't allow me to mention his name right now, but his name will be mentioned eventually. It'll be in my memoirs.
Okay.
Many people know already. I've discussed this matter.
Okay.
And so, 5 years on, he seems like a prophet. And that's the point. If he could recognize this 5 years ago, that this would be the end product, why didn't the fellows around the villa recognize this? They are not worthy of leadership the way he is. Because he obviously saw tomorrow more clearly. And that's what the whole idea of visioning, which leadership requires, is about.
Indeed, Prof. Let's take some calls in, Prof. Let's hear from people listening to you right now, from Lagos and beyond. 0700-993-993-993 is our studio line. Please, you've got 60 seconds to jump on this conversation with Prof. If you want to say anything, feel free to do that. If you're watching online, drop your thoughts there and I will come take them. For the female listeners, the number that you can call as a female listener exclusively to you, this is all for the female caller. The female number is 01465-7190. That is 01465-7190 for the female callers. Ambassador Musbah is here. Ambassador Musbah, good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Bro, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Yeah. Bro, I totally agree with you. Citizen, we agree. We are the problem. And one thing we lost is love. We don't engage ourselves as a brother and sister anymore. No thanks to religious bodies and politicians. These two have divided us more. Religious body, be a Christian, be a Muslim. More problems, creating more problems. I don't know how to solve it. If we can come together as a citizen, we can decide. Like I always say on anywhere, how many citizens, how many politicians, policies, presidents or governors, how many are they? Including our soldiers, how many are they? They are up to 2 million. Let's say 5 million. But we are Nigerian here. We are more than, let's say, 200 million. If we can hold our hands together, we can change the fortune of this country. But we are being divided every day by day until we come together as a one. These are the solution. Good morning.
Thank you, Ambassador Musbah. Let's speak with Joyce. Joyce is joining us from Surulere. Hi, Joyce. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Prof. I wanted to ask you, I remember when you and Unila, you had this group of guys that you were training. They were doing books for you. I think one of them was Ben Ohumale and some other guys. Those guys are fantastic. I just wish you could still be grooming men, guys like that are going to come up and stir this country, because what you were doing then was fantastic and these men were so dedicated. And I know that you have been fighting even when you were traveling from Lagos to Abeokuta to go and meet Professor former President Obasanjo for the reform of this country. You travel late at night, and all you have done is people like you that we really need to bring up men that would know the values of this country. Thank you. And if there's something like that, please call on us. We are ready to join you and steer this country the right way.
Thank you, Joyce, for calling. Prof, there you go. Grooming of tomorrow's leaders.
You know, I'm still doing that. I founded the Center for Values and Leadership precisely to do that, to help the next generation see tomorrow more clearly. Because I think that it is the duty of every generation to make the shoulders available for the next generation to stand on, so right, they can see tomorrow more clearly. A good part of my adult life has been spent trying to groom now second generation of people. I mean, some 20 years or so ago, I got my research assistant to look around, find some of the brightest young people that were, you know, trying to do things. So he pulled together a list. Peladro Toye, Ubong Essien, Febi Daosa, Ni Adesanya, Lanre Olushola, quite a number of them. And I brought them together and I sat with them at lunch and began to talk to them about how to change a society. This is, and I worked with that group of young people. They are now leaders. And Linus Okorie, in fact, was the assistant that I used to pull them together.
Right.
Now, I moved to a next generation. The Chude Jidong was Debola Williams and co. As they were coming up, future awards and all of those. I work with them, and I still do that today. The thing is that my energy is limited, my resources are limited, but I keep plodding. I should be a billionaire, I should be a very well-off man, but I spend more than 90% of what I earn from pure hard work, most of which is from speaking outside of Nigeria, to put into running things, to see how we can order a next generation. I don't get help. The Nigerian private sector is an embarrassment in terms of what they think about the future of Nigeria. You know, they have no structured way of supporting what is a greater good. But maybe that will change, and hopefully we'll make a progress down the line. Like I say, all of us have a role. I think that becoming active in how society makes choice is one of the ways.
Yeah.
Very soon we'll put up a portal. Every Nigerian who thinks that things are not going right, who is not in any political party, just put down your name there. If 10, 15 million put down their names, and we say these are the Nigerian people, the guys who run these things, whatever you call them, the various parties. In fact, somebody was exaggerating, the speaker, before having a million.
Right.
They're not up to 200,000 people. Because of all this our misery, they're not up to 200,000 people. But they have found very clever ways of manipulating people. They have people who run around, who want to be in anything soldiers, so they can get something.
Right.
They use them as foot soldiers. And then the rest of us are victims. If 10, 15 million of us register on a portal and say, we're the Nigerians, and begin to have a conversation. I'm trying to encourage somebody to build a portal, something similar to Facebook.
Right.
Just for talking about your problems, your social problems, you know, on your street. And those on your street finish that conversation, you have a delegation from your street to your
representative.
Local government, whatever. Yeah. And so we can have a Nigeria-wide conversation on our problems. And this would become bigger than any political party. And we'll decide where Nigeria goes. I'm working at it. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to inaugurate a constitution review and drafting committee.
Oh, wow.
There are four co-chairs of this committee. Police Abakoba, Dr. Awolowo Odusumu, Baba Ahmed, Akim Baba Ahmed, and Reverend Father George Hussani. They are co-chairs, the chair of the co-chairs, Olisabakoba, and we have about 40-something Nigerians who will work with them to take all the constitutions Nigeria has had and review them and know why we're in the mess that we are, and provide us a draft to give to the Nigerian people. So work continues. We are citizens, and we must exercise our citizenship right in those kinds of ways.
Right.
Rather allow a few criminals who organize themselves and call themselves politicians to die.
Prof, we must go now. We're out of time. I think we need to do this again. I really hope that we can have time. I feel we have a lot to still discuss as regards citizenship, because this is public enlightenment that most people aren't even aware of. But now that you've broken it down, I think it'll go a long way in sensitizing and waking people up. Professor Patitomi, thank you so much for joining us on the Morning Crossfire today. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Great pleasure, sir.
All right. Professor Patitomi joined us on the Crossfire today. Thank you, sir, for joining us. It's 8:51. We're going to squeeze in a few calls. Huh? We're going to squeeze in like one or two before we play just a minute. Hello, good morning to you. I think we lost that. Let's hang this up and pick another one. Good morning to you.
Hello, good morning, Sherry.
Good morning to you.
Okay, my name is Frank from Badagry.
Frank, talk to me.
Okay. For me, the problem we are passing through in Nigeria is from the foundation.
Hmm.
It's from the foundation, that amalgamation. That is.
Ah, we lost Frank's call. Frank, do try and call me back, okay? Nigeria Info, good morning to you. Hello, good morning to you.
Thank you to the professor.
Yeah.
And then what I want to think then contribute is that we should have what is it called? The electoral process.
Right.
Do you understand?
Right.
You know, before Obasanjo's second term, it used to be like from councillors, you have the chairman, and then it goes up. Mm. Whatever happens that changed that system, that once the president wins, every other thing follows. It should be stopped. And the politicians are not addressing this. And then we're not addressing the fact that we should need credible electoral process. Because once we have it, nobody will bring out a dumps for us. Mm. Nobody will bring out people that don't have ideas. Nobody will be choosing for us. Do you understand?
I'm with you.
Once you know that you bring out somebody that probably, sorry, let me not use the word, and you know that your party will not win.
Mm.
So even when you come to lobby the party, they will tell you, no, we can't sell you.
Right. Right.
You're not a good deal. Right. So that is what every politician should be talking about. We should not be hoping to be using carrying ballot boxes and falsifying results. They should all be talking about credible, so that when you vote, it's ready, reading somewhere. With your fingerprint, you can just go to Benin if you want to go to Benin from Lagos.
Yeah.
That is what we should be talking about. Once we have it, every other thing will fall in place.
Hmm.
And then we should be able to have ID.
Okay.
ID. Somebody cannot tell us that you can come in and visit your relation in Nigeria, then you become a Nigerian and go to the forest and stay.
Hmm.
We have relations abroad. When you visit them, you have a visit visa. Once it expires, you go before it does.
All right.
So we should have that. In Niger, all these people, you know, when they sell ice cream, they will tell you, I can claim to be Nigerian, but you cannot claim to be Niger because I have a number. Do we have a number? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well spoken. Let's go to social media. All my lines are blinking. you know, the good thing about this conversation is it's a series. We're having the second series tomorrow. Not with Prof. Bola Olajide, a policy expert, will be joining me from 8 a.m. We'll have this same conversation from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. So Bola will be joining us at 8 a.m. to continue. So not to worry. I knew that it was going to be as heated, as hot as this. So that's why we have decided that let's do a series Monday, Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'll focus. It's the same thing, but we'll focus on economy of the country on Wednesday. So not to worry. Everything is well sorted out. I have to go. You can follow me up on Twitter at Sherif Quadri, on Instagram at Sherif Quadri, and on LinkedIn at Sherif Quadri. We're back tomorrow with the second part of the existential threat facing Nigeria. You can join the conversation right from 5 a.m. Many thanks to everybody that tuned in today. Stick around for Table Talk with Wemimo. Good morning to you.